How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Hump Day edition of The Yard. It's actually Tuesday evening. I'm trying to get this show done before we go to bed Tuesday night. I know many of you will be traveling on Wednesday to Grandma's house, getting ready for Thanksgiving. So as a result, I'm trying to get this thing done earlier. It's been a busy day. Another big content day over at jeanspage.com. I pitched in four articles today, including everything Lane Kiffin had to say about Mississippi State and what the Rebels were saying about the Bulldogs. Those are free pieces of content. You can go over there and check them out today. As always, jeanspage.com, your source for Mississippi State sports information. And from now, for about a week, we're going to run a 75% off special off the annual subscription rate. If you're a monthly and you've considered being an annual, you can convert. Yeah. And if you're brand new, you can take full advantage of that. 75% off the annual subscription price at jeanspage.com. That's a 247 sports special throughout the networks. Even if you're an Ole Miss fan, you can subscribe to Dave Johnson's Inside the Rebels for 75% off. I know many of you Rebel fans will listen today to hear what I have to say about the game and about your team. So we'll have a top 10 list just for you. How about that? That was one of our most listened to top 10 lists of the year last year. So I'm glad you guys enjoy that. Nice to have you aboard. We'll break down the Rebels today. We'll also talk a little bit about men's and women's basketball, as you guys know. But next time we get together, we'll have played a women's and men's basketball game. A lot of recruiting stuff. We'll get to some of that later in the show. But let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. I have loved them since the very beginning. I still believe me and Brian Haydad were among at least the first 400 customers to go to Bulldog Burger Company, maybe more than that. We got in there pretty quick, and I think we both walked away saying, hey, this place is going to make it. Well, it has. It's expanded its empire. Now, three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. Get that great restaurant quality hamburger. I'm back on the smokehouse kick right now. That's kind of what I'm getting. I need that extra protein in my life. In addition to that, too, you can get that chocolate shake or that Shipley's bread pudding to go. Put that in the fridge when you get a little late-night munchies. There it is. Instead of you having to go just kind of get something out of the pantry, you can have a great dessert, or you can ride that ride home with a smile. Get that Nutella shake to go. Be sure and check them out today if you're in town or on the way to town. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Many of you Bulldog fans have been playing the Egg Bowl in your minds for, I don't know, 6-7 months now. Well, it's finally here. We'll get together on Friday, kickoff at 2:30. Rebels favored by like 26 points right now. It's a big spread. It is. And it's going to take a big effort for Mississippi State to make this game competitive. Ole Miss is a better football team. That's not breaking news. But it's difficult for us Bulldog fans to kind of admit that. We knew it was going to be a rebuilding year for Jeff Lebby, even though he said otherwise. It's a big job. And Ole Miss was loaded for bear this year. Pardon the pun. But expected to make the playoff. And there's still a remote chance that they make it. They'll have to get a win over State and then kind of hope things fall their way. But I think most people right now can kind of consider the season a bit of a disappointment with three losses already. And it's the thing you begin to think about, too. Like, we talk about how difficult it's going to be for State to sell season tickets next year. You know, it's going to be a double whammy, right? You've got the new line item general ledger entry about the house settlement. It's going to be about $25 million. And then you're going to kind of lose a little bit on the revenue side. It's a big task for Zach Selman and the staff to get season ticket renewals next year. And so you may have a decrease in season tickets and an increase in expenses. Dangerous times for Mississippi State. On the other hand, if you're Ole Miss, it's like, hey, we went all in. And I had somebody very close to the Ole Miss donorship that told me last year during the portal season, and it could have just been somebody being braggadocious. He goes, hey, we really don't have the money yet to meet the payroll, but we're going to do whatever we have to do. We're going to load up in the portal. We have until the spring to figure out the financing. We're going to figure it out. And they did. And I give them credit for it. And they put together a really quality product on the field this year. It's going to be difficult to replicate that over and over and over again, despite what people say. But 8-3, I think there's a lot of Ole Miss fans out there that feel like it's been a disappointment. And there are others that are kind of like have accepted it and said, you know what, it's just not going to be. And the thing that I always said beginning of the year, if it didn't happen this year for Ole Miss, with so much parity in the league and them being one of the more veteran teams, it may not happen for a while. It's true. What all started off good enough, they got Furman early on. The Paladins, not much opposition there. 76-0 is your final. Then they get Middle Tennessee, 52-3, and then Wake Forest, a struggling ACC team, 40-6 there in Winston-Salem. So, you know, you can kind of do the math yourself, man. It's almost 170 points the first three ball games, only allowing 9. And give Nick Saban some credit. He said early in the year, what made this Ole Miss team different is their size up front in the trenches. I mean, how many times have we seen it? Ole Miss been prolific offensively and then couldn't stop anybody. And then when they ran up against a good defense or people could match up outside or generate some pass rush, they lost. It's a different team this year. All right, week four, Georgia Southern, the former Fighting Jared Bankos, he's now at Auburn, reunited with John Cohen and that group, 52-13 winners in that ball game. So again, you roll through the four non-conference games in impressive fashion. And so you could say, but Steve, I mean, these are not, you know, great teams. It's true, but Ole Miss did what good teams do with substandard competition, and they blew them out. And again, you start looking at this thing, man, 22 points combined in the first four ball games. All right, you get into SEC play, it's a little bit different. It is. And Kentucky, and we talked about this when it happened, Mark Stoops and his staff make it a weird game. They just do. And I don't know how they do it. There's nothing pretty about what they do. It's effective. Sometimes it hasn't been this year. Of course, they've kind of survived for years. In the SEC East, kind of taking advantage of the fact that Vandy, South Carolina, and Tennessee were all down. And so they, you know, they'd win those games and beat State every other year, maybe pick up a win against the West and finish 4-4, 5-3, and everybody's like, hey, Kentucky is a contender in waiting. They weren't, and they're not. And this year, since they've had to play a more challenging SEC schedule, they're right there with us. They're like a game, two games ahead of us in the SEC standings. But huge win here for Kentucky to go into Oxford and win that game 20-17. It was absolute pandemonium. We were on the road there at Texas watching it all unfold. And so the Rebels missed the game-tying field goal, and Kentucky wins. So right out of the gate, as soon as you get into SEC play, people are like, Ole Miss's playoff hopes are in trouble. The next week, they bounce back and, give the defense a lot of credit here. South Carolina had been playing well. They hadn't really found their groove just yet. They'd had some injuries. But Ole Miss goes in there. It was a very business-like approach in this ballgame. They win 27-3, and at no point did you ever think South Carolina was going to make this game competitive. Offensively, wasn't one of Ole Miss's better days. It was kind of back-to-back games. You look at it and say they didn't play well offensively against Kentucky. They played better against South Carolina. Defense really stood up that day. And then you got to go to LSU. And as mentioned on the show, previewing that game, Ole Miss has not played well at LSU in recent memory. That's something that some of the SEC pundits tend to forget. It is so difficult. And Lane Kiffin was asked about this press conference on Monday about, you know, the variance between home games and away games. Is it getting bigger? And I think it is. I think it is getting bigger. And I think a lot of it is kind of the mental psyche. I don't know if we really train guys as hard as we used to deal with road environments. It's one thing to pipe in music and noise and cowbells and things like that, but there, at times in this conference, there is some visceral hatred in the air, especially when you go to Oxford and places like that. But at OSU, and I've said this so many times too, I live in OSU, lived in Baton Rouge for 16 years. If there is a rivalry between OSU and Ole Miss, OSU folks don't know it. Now, they get all nice and cordial, and they remember the Billy Cannon stuff. And, you know, hey, remember that? You know, I remember in 2002, Eli Manning going down there throwing a pick to remove all hope in the game, and a lot of guys with Bama bangs and, you know, North Face sweater vest on and things like that were complaining about number 10, how number 10 cost us the game. Well, this time, OSU's defense really got after that Ole Miss offensive line in that second half. I believe half a dozen sacks in the game. And what can you say about Garrett Nussmeier? He's been up and down. He's a little bit of a swashbuckler, but made a huge fourth down throw for a touchdown, and then they win in overtime 29-26. So now it's two losses. At the time, LSU was ranked 10th. It's a big win. Oklahoma goes to Oxford. Oklahoma's not had a great year. They're bowl eligible now, but you know, Oklahoma, you expect to do more than go play in Liberty Bowl. All due respect to our friends that are associated with that great postseason game. But again, offensively, wasn't great. And so people kind of began to wonder, have people kind of figured out the Ole Miss offense? Well, then they go to Fayetteville, a place they have not played well. And they put up 63 points. And honestly, I think they could have put up 70. But they found their groove in Fayetteville. Had they lost that game, we'd be having a much different conversation today. But they didn't. They won it big. Give them a lot of credit. And that was right after we had played Arkansas. You know, we felt like, hey, maybe they figured some things out here. You know, they figured out that State has trouble stopping people. But you go back and look at this box score. It's pretty gaudy type stuff. Ole Miss puts in 30 first downs and 562 yards passing in the game. Nearly 700 yards of offense, 694 in an SEC game against a bowl-eligible team. It's not like they just did it against, you know, a Vanderbilt team, you know, years ago that wasn't very good. It's a rivalry we're going to miss. But that was an impressive win. And I get it, Arkansas is just kind of fair to Midland. But when you go put up almost 700 yards of offense and nearly hang 70 on somebody in their own backyard, that's impressive. I don't care who it is. Especially, it's not like they're playing Furman. Playing Arkansas, a team that's kind of giving them trouble. I remember last time they went up there, Arkansas ran all over them. But they figured it out. The next week, what many people thought would be the silver bullet to Ole Miss's playoff hopes, the Georgia Bulldogs. And guys, I tell you this, if you watched that game, and many of you did, at no point did Georgia look like the better team. Ole Miss really played well. They get out to, you know, it's a 7-0 game. You know, right out of the chute, Georgia goes right down and scores. And then, you know, because Jackson Dart throws a pick. It gets hurt on a play. Georgia scores. They bring in the backup quarterback. And he leads Ole Miss right down the field. And they tie it up. And you start thinking, you know what? Hey, it may just be Ole Miss's day. Turns out that it was. Rebels win 28-10, one of the biggest wins in modern history. And it legitimized Ole Miss in the minds of many. As, hey, these guys are a legit playoff contender. Yes, they lost to Kentucky. Yes, they lost to LSU. But they've beaten Georgia. Then they can control their own destiny. With that in mind, they get the open date, a chance to prepare for Florida, a struggling Florida team. Of course, Florida beats LSU, so you got to take them a little more seriously. And so the Rebels roll into Gainesville and lose. You know, we talked about that beginning of the year, you know, about that may be a trouble game for them because, and as reiterated last week, there are some venues, no matter the quality of season the home team is having, like going to LSU, going to Texas A&M, going to Florida, those are still hostile environments. And Ole Miss found out pretty quick. Guys, it was a really, really tight ball game. And, of course, I think Lane Kiffin made some mistakes, not just taking the points. And you get down 7-0, you come back and tie it up on that long pass to Trey Harris, who has probably played his last down as a Rebel, I think it's pretty safe to say. A lot of discussion about that in media. It's just, you know, kind of a recurrence of the same injury, and you hate that, right? You know, wish him a full recovery. Well, then Ole Miss gets the lead 14-7 after the Caden Lee touchdown catch and run. And then right before the half, Florida scores again, 14-14. So you get to the break, Florida comes out, gets a field goal, gets the lead, Ole Miss ties it, and you get to the fourth quarter. And in the fourth quarter, Florida simply looked like the fresher team. And they win 24-17. Been a lot of action on those Ole Miss message boards over the last 72 hours as fans of other SEC teams have gone to read the weeping of the Ole Miss fans, who had a lot to say all year. But, yeah, it's a good year for Ole Miss. It's not a great year. And of course, if they find a way to slip into the playoffs, they'll hang a banner, as they should. But getting a little deeper inside these numbers here, Ole Miss averaging 38.5 points a game. But that's not the most impressive stat to me, because you know, you can rack up some big numbers in the non-conference, and they did, and it kind of skews the numbers a bit. But, guys, they're giving up less than 14 points a game, 13.91 points per game. When you're only giving up 14 points a game, there's a really good chance you're going to win most of those games. They've only allowed 153 points. And, again, I know the non-conference schedule was weak. I get that. But they have shown up and played pretty good defense in SEC play. It's true. No matter what you may think, it's true. A lot more balance on offense this year, too. They're maybe not running it with the same proficiency in recent weeks that they did early on. But 109 first downs rushing, 149 through the air, 16 by way of penalty. But 274 first downs. They've allowed 70 on the ground, 108 through the air. And in 31, which is, that's a disciplinary issue, right? Twice as many penalties, first downs by way of penalty for your opponents. So, you know, you're kind of extending drives, which makes the scoring number all the more impressive, right? It's just sometimes you have some inconsistent or undisciplined play that extends a drive, but yet you're able to keep them out of the end zone. On the rushing side of things, 1,880 yards for the Rebels. They've allowed 963, so outrushing their opponents basically double. And listen, I don't know what it is, and Lane Kiffin was asked about this too. You know, the top rushing offenses are not from the SEC. Not sure if it's just a bad year for running backs in a league or people having, you know, better fronts, whatever. I agree with.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Hey, it hasn't been, you know, you haven't had that running back this year. And a lot of the guys, like, you know, you've got, you know, Samson at Tennessee. It's not real sexy, right? You got Noel at Missouri. It's just not real sexy. It's not like, you know, when you have, you know, a great running back, you know, at Alabama or Georgia or somebody that's kind of carrying the load. You know, even Montrell Johnson in Florida, it's not something that really moves the needle. So it's interesting to see that, how things work in cycles like that. From the passing standpoint, Rebels 253 at 373 with six picks. Their opponents 224 at 369 with nine interceptions. Depth of target has very much been in favor of Ole Miss, 10.67. Against Ole Miss, it's less than 7 yards per attempt. So a lot of underneath stuff, which tells me they're doing a really good job kind of playing cloud, making people throw it underneath, checking the ball down, which means they're locking up coverage on the back end. But throwing for 362 yards a game, allowing just 225, 26 touchdowns through the air against just 10. Almost 4,000 yards of offense. And guys, Jackson Dart, I've said before, he gets way too much criticism in my estimation. I thought he was a poor decision maker a couple years ago. He's gotten better with that. Last week is not indicative, I think, of the progress he's made. I think last week, I mean, it's a bad deal, right? I mean, you throw the pick, you cry your eyes out, they reverse the call, put you back on the field, and you throw it anyway. It's like the fake injury thing, and God was watching, right? It's like, oh, we'll save that. We'll put a pin in that for now. We'll come back to it when it can hurt you the most. Total offensive numbers, elite, 5,860 yards to just 3,436 for their opponents. 52 touchdowns for the Rebels against just 16. It's a good team, guys. It is. You can tell yourself whatever you want to. This is a good Ole Miss team. You don't need me to tell you that. But the numbers are indicative of a team that has played very, very high-level football on both sides of the line. It is what it is. And to suggest otherwise would be disingenuous. It's that there's a reason you love it so much when they lose. It's not just because of the fact they're our rivals, but everybody loves to see the upset. Everybody. And Ole Miss has been one of those teams this year that has been upset. You know, with three losses now to teams that are currently unranked, that won't sit well with the playoff selection committee. It just won't. All right, punting, averaging 46.43 punts yards per punt for Ole Miss, 43 for their opponents. So a net average of right at 44 for Ole Miss. Maybe that gives Kevin Coleman a chance to make a play. Maybe. We'll see. Ole Miss 21-25 in field goal attempts and opponents 14-17. Penalties, that's been a little bit of an issue, as we discussed. About 78 yards a game in real estate given up by Ole Miss on penalties. Opponents just 58. 84 penalties flagged against the Rebels. Time of possession, yes, again, we talk about sometimes the numbers can be skewed with TOP. People say it's kind of a meaningless stat. It's not when you've got a team that's a ball control that keeps a game and just shortens the game on you. But Ole Miss, a prolific offense that scores from far and scores quickly. They run a lot of tempo, right at 28 minutes per game. So opponents have actually had it about 4 minutes per game. Really hadn't made a difference. It's made a difference like in the games they've lost, though, you know, when teams are just kind of salting the game away. Rebels pretty good on third down, too, 57 of 141. Opponents just 32%. Fourth down conversions, they've gone for it 25 times. They've gotten it 14 times. They'll go for it on fourth down against us, too. You just might as well get ready, and we should, too. Rebels have had 14 of 28 fourth down conversions successful against their defense. Ole Miss has fumbled the football a dozen times. They've lost it six. Opponents have fumbled it 17 times, lost it 10 times. State's going to have to win the turnover battle for sure. 49 sacks for the Ole Miss defense, 24 for their opponents. And they will get after you. Give Pete Golding some credit. He's got some war daddies and he uses them, especially up front. 49 of 51 in PATs and 15 of 15 for their opponents. In the red zone, Ole Miss been good. 53 attempts in the red zone, 42 ending points, 30 of them touchdowns. When you get in the red zone against Ole Miss, you can score, but typically it's a field goal. 20 of 28 trips in the red zone end in a score, and only 13 of those the touchdown variety. Looking at some individual numbers here, we'll start with rushing. Because here's something that I don't think anybody's really talking about. We talk about how poorly we have played against the run. And if you read the Ole Miss line of thinking, they have not been especially good in run blocking. Lane Kiffin said it himself. Been very good in pass pro, not good in run blocking. And then you look at this depth chart at running back, it's not great. And so you think about that. That could be an area that should be a strength for Ole Miss. It has been for most teams that have played Mississippi State. They've been able to line up and run the football against us. But with Ole Miss's injuries at the running back position and the offensive line's trouble in run blocking, perhaps that ends up being maybe a bit of a wash. If you can make them a little bit one-dimensional and match up on the outside, maybe you make a game of it. I just don't know if you can get pressure on Jackson Dart. He's a mobile quarterback. I've told you guys before, I'm impressed by the guy. I think he does a good job. But Henry Parrish Jr. is out. He is the team's leading rusher with 678 yards and 10 touchdowns. Jackson Dart is the second leading rusher, 375. Matt Jones, the third leading rusher, is also banged up, has only played in seven games here this year. Ulysses Bentley, this is something the Ole Miss people have talked about extensively. He had that big 50-yard rip and run earlier this year. And then outside of that, it's 213 yards total. So you back out the 50, it's 143 in 11 games. And that was the thing. Kiffin has been asked about this. You know, what about Bentley? And he goes, hey, if you want to look at numbers, look at average yards per carry. Guys, it's still 4.3. He's averaging 19 yards a game. And I think a lot of people are like, hey, we've got this guy. I liked him when they signed him out of Navy. But when you look at it and say, hey, this is probably a guy that should get more carries, that's a question the Ole Miss people have been asking. Just 50 carries this year for a guy that's been in the program now for a couple years, and they expect some big things from, and maybe he'll play a lot on Friday. I suspect he will, but, you know, we'll see. You never know what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, Kiffin says it's not a health issue. It hasn't really been an off-the-field issue, but for some reason he's not playing. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, perhaps whatever Kiffin's decision is going to remain his decision. He does not appear in any way eager to explain his decisioning. He did say being a head coach requires to make difficult decisions, and he's made those decisions and kind of left it at that. So you never know what's going on behind the scenes, but for one reason or another, Ulysses Bentley has not been utilized perhaps in the way that Rebel fans think he should be. Dominic Thomas, number 26 for them, 11 games, 34 carries. And so, again, you start looking through these numbers. You know, last week, you may recall, against Florida, they put a wide receiver at running back. And then they asked Kiffin about that on Monday and said, hey, is that kind of that the plan going forward? And he goes, hey, I don't want to really give away anything, you know, game plan-wise. And maybe that's true. But what's interesting about that, it kind of leans me to think that maybe Bentley's going to play. But, you know, you look at this, Micah Davis, 11 carries for 27 yards. Dominic Thomas, 3 carries for 20. J.J. Pegues had 6 carries for 19 yards. And I'm sure in short yardage we're going to see him. Matt Jones just 1 for 4. And, again, he's been banged up some this year. So it's a running back room that has some question marks due to injury and just kind of this mystery behind this whole thing with Ulysses Bentley. I wish I had some inside information for all involved, but we don't. You know, we just don't know what they're going to do. But I suspect it'll be all hands on deck on Friday. It's an important game. It is what it is. I mean, the only chance you have to make the playoffs is to beat Mississippi State and then allow the traffic to kind of you know, kind of clear around you. And you got a good weekend last weekend because of all the chaos in college football. It could be another chaotic weekend, and maybe you benefit from it if you're Ole Miss. All right, Jackson Dart's played 11 games. 235 completions with 339 yards. He's thrown 6 picks and is completing right at 70% of his passes for 3,732 yards and 24 touchdowns, right at 340 a game. Austin Simmons is a young man that was a big part of that Georgia game. Played in 8 games this year, 18 of 31. Played some mop-up duty as well. Thrown a couple of touchdowns. Walker Howard, who has not played a meaningful down this year at Ole Miss, and I'm told that he won't. We expect him to be in a transfer portal as soon as it opens. Good chance he'll land somewhere else in the SEC. But he's appeared in 2 games and thrown 2 passes and hasn't seen any action worth note. And this is a young man, obviously, that has some connections to Mississippi State. And so, you know, the Howard family is a big part of our family, right? And so you hate that for him. You hated, number one, that he went to Ole Miss in the first place. But people have to do what's best for themselves. But he's been to OSU, transfer, goes to Ole Miss for what was reportedly a very lucrative NIL deal. And now he's not playing. I'm told it's for reasons not related to football. And not that he's been a problem. Just coach's decision. Right? That's just the coach has just decided that he prefers Austin Simmons in backup situations over Walker Howard. Not sure what Kiffin's reasoning is, but he's the coach and he's won 9 games this year. But yeah, you can expect Walker Howard to be in the portal immediately once the portal opens. We wish him and his family the absolute best. All right, from the receiving standpoint, we talked about Trey Harris. Big play guy. Like a lot of people talked about him. Guys, he's missed 3 games this year due to injury. And according to reports, he's had this groin injury that has kind of been a nagging deal for him. And then in the Florida game, it happened again. The same injury, gets hit in the same spot. So in some respects, he's kind of back to square one. And again, you hate that for a guy, especially a guy as talented as he, but he'll get a chance to play in the NFL. I don't think there's any question. 60 catches this year for 1,030 yards. And think about that. He's three games short of everybody else and leads by 240 yards over the second leading receiver. Seven touchdowns. That's a big play guy that will not be available in the Egg Bowl on Friday. Caden Lee has been a very good Robin to Harris's Batman. 46 grabs, some 190 yards, a couple touchdowns. Real speedy guy. Jordan Watkins is a guy that's had some good games against Mississippi State. 37 catches for him, 7 touchdowns. Number 11. It always seems like on third down, like it's third and medium or third and long, they always kind of have a way to find him. You get him paired up with a safety, he does some good things. Juice Wells, that's one that I think that they probably feel like maybe they haven't gotten the ROI on this one. I know a lot of our people were worried about that. You know, Juice Wells played 11 games, 27 catches, 521 yards, 5 touchdowns, but just 47 yards. You know, and they threw the pass his direction on Saturday against Florida. I don't know if Juice cut the route off early or it was an option route. They were just not on the same page. But Juice has had a decent year, but it's not been, I think, what many people anticipated it being. So that's always something interesting. And then Caden Preschool, and that's an interesting thing too. You know, I saw his wife, some tweet somebody shared with me some time ago that his wife was up with something. There was an incident, and she said it was an Ole Miss fan. It made her feel uncomfortable at a game. She never thought that would happen. And I don't understand why he hadn't been utilized more. I mean, and again, I don't know what's going on behind, you know, the practice fence at Ole Miss. But Prescorn's a guy, you know, made the big leaping catch. Guy's got size, got good hands, 20 grabs for 22 yards, a couple touchdowns. But he's a guy, too. I don't know if he's just been banged up or, you know, for one reason or another, I don't know they fully utilized him. And again, you look at the offensive numbers, how can you kind of pick it apart? But they've got some guys who were expected to do some big things and hadn't done as much here as of late. Defensively, again, this is a group that's been very, very good. Very good. And I don't know that they've gotten maybe the respect they deserve in that respect. I don't know how you guys feel about it. Maybe you've kept up with it. But because so many people look at Ole Miss as, you know, it's an offensive-friendly team, right? And so you think offense when you think about Ole Miss. But, you know, you look at total defensive numbers here. They're a top 20 defense. Let me make sure we've got those updated. Yeah, they're a top 20 defense. 18th in the country. 312 yards a game. That's it. It's good numbers. And then you look at, you know, scoring defense. We talked about how gaudy those numbers are. We can't find that. Scoring defense. Yeah, here it is. Here it is. They're fifth in the country in scoring defense. And what's interesting, Tennessee is fourth. Texas is three. State's played them both. So State's going to play three of the top five scoring defenses in the country this year. Another interesting thing, too, if we can find the stat here, tackles for loss. That's one of those things, too, that's just absolutely crazy to think about, you know, moving the line of scrimmage, right? Ole Miss leads the nation in TFLs. It's pretty crazy. It is. And so this is a group, again, that's very good at the line of scrimmage. Good pass pro, good pass rush, and really good at fitting gaps. And when you got big body guys up there, you can do that. You know, that's a thing you look at. It's just absolutely, you know, again, that's been the missing ingredient for Ole Miss over the years. It's been the defensive piece because they put their best athletes on offense. Ole Miss currently leads the nation in sacks. 49 sacks on a year. And that's a little bit of a cushion there, too. Like, Boise State is second with 43. And then South Carolina, a bit of a surprise there, 39. So the Rebels are getting after it, moving the line of scrimmage, kind of dictating terms on defense. And that's where the Bulldogs are going to have to really stand up tall and compete. Going to have to do a good job protecting Michael Van Buren and finding a way to run the football. You know, they have been really, really good against the run. And we have been running it better as of late. And that's something, you know, that kind of come along here. But Ole Miss, number two in the country in rush defense, trailing only Indiana. Giving up 87 yards a game. And again, there's been some other teams that have had some pretty good rush defense numbers ahead of our game, and we found a way to make some plays. We're going to have to be two-dimensional, because if you put Michael Van Buren in obvious passing downs, they're going to chase him. And at times, they're going to get him. All right, looking at special teams numbers here, Frazier Mason, 28 punts on the year. We mentioned 46.43. That's a long of 65. One touchback, 12 for catches, 11 over 50. Maybe he can outkick the coverage. Caden Davis, 21-25, 84% conversion rate on the field goals. Everything under 30 is automatic. And then he's missed a couple from 30 to 39, missed one from 40 to 49, and missed one 50-plus. He does have a long of 57. I think that came against LSU. Kickoffs, 81 kickoffs from Caden Davis, 70 of them are touchbacks. So pretty good proficiency there. Mike Baker, a couple of kickoffs, only one touchback. But, you know, Caden Davis will be the dude. Looking at the return numbers here. Punt returner Micah Davis has done much of this, 17 punt returns for 102 yards. Not really anything explosive there. One return of 26. So you back that out and you can see the average is, it's really not anything spectacular. Jordan Watkins has fielded three punts for 24 yards, averaging 8 yards a return, and one of those for 17. Kickoffs, they have not returned it a lot. Micah Davis, five returns for 113 yards, a long of 30. And then Daquan Wright, one for 21, and Matt Jones, one for 7. That's probably a squib kick. But seven returns for 141 yards, and ironically, nine returns for their opponents for just 141 yards. So it'll probably be a game of touchbacks in that respect. But again, this is a good Ole Miss team. And anybody expecting, you know, anybody expecting Ole Miss to just kind of roll over and play dead, it's probably kidding themselves, right? Now, I would love to sit here and tell you, okay, here's the deal. Ole Miss had a very emotional loss. It's a short week against a team that's very angry and hungry for a win this week. It's also senior day at Ole Miss. And maybe that didn't mean as much when you feel like you've got more to play for. And a lot of people have continued to tell them, hey, you still got a chance. You still got a chance. And I think that's probably true. I don't think it's a great chance. But again, like we discussed, I think you got to beat Mississippi State or there is no chance. You beat State and then hope some other crazy things happen. And, you know, we'll see what things look like when the playoff rankings come out, and perhaps they'll be out before we finish the show. But the reality of all this craziness in college football, nobody knows for sure what is going to happen. That's the thing that if that's what last weekend taught us, it's just when you think you've got a good idea on where things are, things change. They do. Things change. All right, let's see here. Yeah. We're going to get some. Maybe we'll have those when we come. Because I'm going to take a break and come back and we'll have dinner with the family. And then I'll come back and finish up the show. So by that time, we'll have the rankings. But, They may be 13th, 14th in the rankings. But it's like you win this one and then get a couple teams ahead of you to lose. And they're right back in it. Are they a strong playoff team? No, they're not. And especially when you consider the fact they got some skill guys beat up. They truly do. You know, we talked about the running back room. Trey Harris is out. You know, and so you start thinking about that. Any team that loses wide receiver one and RB one is going to have some guys step up. And then as you play, you know, an increased level of competition, those injuries and the lack of depth really kind of show up. But, yeah, I'm picking Ole Miss to win. I do think State will cover. I do. And I think here's the thing, too, with State, and we'll talk about this a little bit more on Friday. We can't come out chasing the game because we've proven we'll never catch it. Right? If we get behind in a game, we may keep it close for a while, but we're not going to be able to catch the game. So State needs to come out and play even. You need to get into the half even. Give yourself a chance. Don't feel like, hey, we're in a bad position here, and we can't come back. And it'll be interesting, too, like winning the toss. Like a lot of teams want to defer. Lane Kiffin likes to get the ball first to go on offense to set the tone. Jeff Lebby likes it, too. I wonder, if Lane Kiffin wins a toss, will they take the ball first? Well, if they do, and maybe you get a stop and you can get into the half even and then get it first coming out of the half, maybe you really make a game of this thing. Right? I've always been a guy that likes to defer. That's just been me because I think you get more information over the course of a game. I like to have it first coming out of the half. I like to have it last going into the half. But if I can't have it last and you score last, I have a chance to get even. I can't give you back-to-back possessions. If you go down and score on the last possession of the first half and leave me under a minute to go and I can't get anything out of it, then I got to kick it back to you. It's basically going 2-for-1. But again, offensive-minded coaches like having the ball first. They do. But, yeah, we'll take Ole Miss to win, but we'll take State to cover. And if State can find a way, because you never know how these emotions are going to go in these games. I do believe Mississippi State will be a lot more fired up to play than Ole Miss. I do. And I think a lot of it's because of this cloud that's hanging over Ole Miss and the weight of great expectations. I think if you're State, you're so frustrated, you're thinking, you know what, we're going to go out here and play wide open. We've got nothing to lose. Ole Miss has a lot left to lose because I still think there is a remote chance that they could be in the playoff. You lose to Mississippi State, you have no chance in the playoff. Zero. So they have to win this game. We can go out there and just throw caution to the wind. We're not going anywhere. We can throw everything we have at winning this game just because of the fact that it could be one measure of happiness after what's kind of been a miserable season. I still believe in Jeff Levy, and I think State will get back on track next year. Are we ready to contend for Atlanta? No. But I do think you'll see some great improvement next year. Certainly hope so. You know, it's bad on all of us when football's not great. You know, because football takes care of everything else, so we have to take care of football. But we need football to take care of itself. And I still believe Jeff Levy will do that. And I think Jeff Levy will make the decisions that he feels is best for the future of Mississippi State football. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. When you're young, you don't understand how important having a mortgage guy is. 601-500-2344. That's the only number you need. 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair Chandler. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or perhaps your retirement home, Blair is the name to know. Thus, closewithblair.com. Go by and check out the website today. Get more information. Get that pre-qualification letter, kids. If you're just getting your home for the first time, you don't need to be shopping above your means, because then when you have to get a house that's a little bit less than you're looking for, you're going to be disappointed. Don't waste your time, your real estate agent's time, until you know for sure what you can get approved for. Blair can help you with that. Take all the guesswork out of it, make it a lot easier process for you. You don't want to have to work overtime and only sleep at your home. You want to be able to enjoy that, right? Blair's the first name when it comes to mortgage lending origination. And he's licensed in multiple states, if I can get it out. A lot of our Boneyard listeners have closed loans with him. You'll be glad you did. He can be your advocate with underwriting. It can be a very convoluted process. Put his 23 years of experience to work for you. A lot of tough lessons in life. There's no point having to learn how to do mortgage loan origination when you've got an expert at your disposal like Blair Chandler. He's one of us. He's a Bulldog through and through. Owns a place in Starkville. He's a multiple sports season ticket holder. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. Blair's going to do a great job for you, no matter who you cheer for. But if you're a Bulldog, that's the way to go. Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay. Sometimes I like to find obscure things to talk about on our top 10 list. So today, top 10 songs written and recorded by Warrens. Warrens. My favorite uncle is Warren Selman. My grandfather was Warren Jefferson Selman Sr., a name fit for the presidency. He was a minister. But Warren's been a big name in our family. And so I thought, you know what? Let's see if I can't put a list together about Warrens. So I have. Number 10, it's the punk rock group from Orange County, California. It's the Vandals. I know Coy Welburn will be excited about this. The Vandals, If the Government Could Read My Mind. And you hear that, and it's like, they'd know I'm thinking about you. And I hope you're thinking about me too. but Warren Fitzgerald was the guitar player for the Vandals, among other bands. Number nine, going back to the psychedelic era, the Haight-Ashbury era, kind of a challenging time in our country's history, an important time. Big song, I think it might actually be a cover. I'm not exactly sure, but the Grassroots had a great song called Let's Live for the Day. Warren Entner, the guitar player, also went on to be a very well-recognized rock and heavy metal aficionado, managed a lot of bands once his playing career was over. Grassroots, kind of an important band. Kind of, you know, a lot of people just know the hits from that era. But the Grassroots, I think they had like 10 albums. Number eight, Missing Persons. Yeah, Missing Persons had a guitar player, a founding member named Warren Cuccarello. He also was in Duran Duran for a little while, and Oingo Boingo, if memory serves me correctly. We're going to go with words, because, you know, what are words worth if people don't listen anymore? They were trying to tell us back in the 80s, and it's so funny now, like, you get on social media, and some of these people make me want to yank my dreads out, man, when I see people, like, there's just so much incredible misinformation out there. I had a discussion with somebody earlier today. I said something, and they brought up something else, and I kind of had a, you know, disparaging word about it. And I guess, well, you brought it up. No, you brought it up, you know. No, but you had a tone. You know, it's funny how life works. Number seven, a band that you probably don't know, but you should know. Yeah, true story. So in the early 70s, you know, we had a lot of this prog rock and things like that. But there were a couple of bands out there, too, that, you know, Cactus was one, Vanilla Fudge, and bands like that, that kind of had more of an edge to them. You had all of this darker, heavier stuff, you know, with Black Sabbath and, you know, these bands from England, things like that. We had a really good kind of a forerunner to hard rock in America, a band called Blood Rock, guitar player and flutist and singer Warren Hamm, who has played with everybody, man. He was with Cher, Olivia Newton-John. He has done horns for everybody in music. He was a vocalist for Blood Rock, a track that you probably have heard, but you've probably forgotten about, those from my generation anyway. It's a track called Help Is On The Way. I don't mean the Little River Band track. When you hear it, Blood Rock is a band too. You can go back to Blood Rock 1, Blood Rock 2. Blood Rock 2 has a great song called DOA on it. But it was about four albums in when Warren Hamm became the vocalist for this band. Probably worth a little time. Like for you guys that kind of like to know the history of music and, you know, how it's kind of progressed over the years, this is a band that kind of homogenized in some respects, because you still hear some of that, you know, late 60s psychedelic vibe in this. Because there's some organ stuff in it too. And it's kind of like, you know, what kind of like Deep Purple light almost. I think you'll dig them. I really do. When you're out traveling one day and you're just like, I'm just sick of everything on my playlist and I've heard on my podcast, put on some Blood Rock. Check it out. I think you'll have fun with it. All right, number six. Probably one of the most accomplished American Warrens in the rock industry is Government Mule's Warren Haynes. Played with the Allman Brothers. He's been with everybody. He's done some work with the Grateful Dead. Best known for founding Government Mule. I saw them open for the Black Crowes at the Marquis de Lafayette in Lafayette, Louisiana. Absolutely blew me away. I didn't know anything about Government Mule. I was there to see the Crowes. And Government Mule came out there and just absolutely rocked the show. It was great. And we're going to go with a great track called Rockin' Horse that Warren Haynes actually co-wrote with the iconic Greg Allman. Yeah, how cool is that, man? Great, great, great song, too. Rockin' Horse from Government Mule. I know BJ Cummings will be excited about that. All right, number five. Some of you wrestling fans will recognize this. And when it first began to kind of make the rounds, people thought it was Rage Against the Machine. It was not. It's the Chris Warren Band singing Are You Ready, which is the theme from D-Generation X. The Chris Warren Band did a few walkout tracks for bands of WWE fame, but this may be the most recognizable, the DX theme, Are You Ready? I love it, man. I love DX. I got two words for you. Yeah. All right, number four, no list of rock aficionados and rock musicians. There was a lot of debate, did he belong in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or not? A lot of people felt no. I kind of come down with yes, but I'm still a little salty that Motley Crue's not in. It took so long to get Foreigner in. There's a lot of bands out there that deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that are not, and there are a lot of artists that are in the Rock and Roll Fame that have no business being there. I could make some of those same claims about the Max. I'm just saying. But nevertheless, I'll be nice. But it's Warren Zevon's Werewolves of London. We're going number four, Werewolves of London. I know I'm not going to do it. I probably could, but I'm not. The opening line, you know, saw a werewolf with a ham sandwich. You know, it's not a song to be taken seriously. It was a big hit, though. And many of you are going to recognize it because it's sampled in Kid Rock's All Summer Long. All right, number three. This is another one of those bands that I wish more people knew, right? Even Kurt Cobain, those of you that are Nirvana fans, said himself, he was always trying to kind of rip off the Pixies, but he kind of got his start in music as a roadie for the Melvins. And in many respects, the Melvins were the godfathers of the grunge movement. Them and kind of Mother Love Bone. Yeah, it's true. It's a true story. But, you know, the Melvins were the first to kind of do drop D tuning. And, man, it's kind of a noisy, full sound with them. And sometimes, you know, they're just a three-piece. And you think, how in the world are they making this much racket as a three-piece? And a lot of it's just because of the guitar work. It's a little bit raspy and noisy and kind of unrefined, but it makes perfect sense. It comes up, it's unpolished, but it comes off. It's kind of pure and full. I really dig the Melvins. My buddy Craig Carter got to see them in Jackson here a couple years ago. I missed the show. But we're going to go with The Water Glass. And Jared Warren was the bass player. Another Warren there. He was with them for about 10 years. But the Melvins, even the earlier stuff, like the debut album from the Melvins, there's so many good songs on there. And I think it's one of these bands, too, because their sound is so tight and in somewhat familiar because so many people were influenced by the Melvins. It's another band I think you'll have fun with. Just kind of put it on. Don't look at the singles and that kind of stuff. Just kind of put on an album and put on Melvin Essentials and just let it play and wash over you. And I think you're going to enjoy the trip. I do. All right, number two, I would be remiss. How could we have a list of Warrens without Warren G? And of course, we're going to go with Regulate. That's right. Warren G and Nate Dogg in the house. Mississippi's own Nate Dogg. But Regulate, yeah. Mount Up, you know, of course, that's from Young Guns. If you don't know the Young Guns movie, what are you doing with your life? It's so many young people I meet today, I ask, like, you know, it's from Young Guns. Oh, what's Young Guns? And I think to myself, some of your parents have failed you. They have really failed you. Like, you don't know Point Break. You don't know Red Dawn. You don't know Young Guns 1 and 2. You don't know who Billy the Kid is or was. I mean, come on, man. I don't fault America's youth. I fault their parents. And a lot of those people, too, of course, you know, they kind of, back when we were in high school, you know, they kind of railed against all of us in the smoking kid section. And look what you've done. Look what the generation you've raised. And so I'm taking as many of these young kids today under my wing. I'm being their sponsor. I'm trying to get them ready, giving them a little Motley Crue, giving them some Two Live Crew. You know, I'm going to make sure that they're ready for the world because their parents have failed them. If you don't know Young Guns 1 and 2, what are we doing? What are we doing? Number one, though. And you know, I had to slip some hair metal in here. And those of you that know me know exactly where we're going with this one. Shout out to the homie Sam Denton. We're going with Rats Lay It Down and the incredible guitar tone of Warren DeMartini. One, like, that's the thing too. There's so many casual fans of the genre. They don't know the name, but they know the sound of Rat, and they know Warren DeMartini. I mean, I know his name, but they recognize those licks. What an incredible guitarist. I don't know that Warren gets enough respect. I mean, he comes up with round and round. He comes up with lay it down. He comes up with shame, shame, shame. I mean, come on, man. He comes up with Way Cool Jr. Goodness, I could make a case that Rat should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We got Warren Zevon in. Why can't we get Rat Motley Crue in? Rat, incredible band. Warren DeMartini, in many respects. Like, when I think about that band, when I think about Rat, to me, the two things that stand out about Rat, Bobby Blotzer was great. Maybe not as great as he thought. Juan Cruchet was great. But I could find a lot of people to play bass. Robin Crosby was really good, but he wasn't great. You know, sadly, we lost him. But to me, the sound of Rat is the cool stylings vocally of Stephen Piercy, who I think had the coolest voice of the genre. He didn't have this big operatic voice. It was just kind of in the raspy, rusty pocket, man. Love it. And then Warren DeMartini. I think if you had Stephen and Warren, it didn't matter who else you had, because you had one of the better guitar players of the genre and one of the coolest singers. So Rat's Lay It Down. It's your number one track today. I feel like I'm talking a little bit loud. Lay It Down. And for you wrestling fans, too, that used to watch, Mid-South, it became UWF and all that good stuff. Jake the Snake Roberts and those guys had, like, the rock video. Lay It Down was the soundtrack. Remember when Jake the Snake and Humongous were tag team partners and they won the belts? Remember that? They did. They won the belts. Pretty cool stuff. So there you go. That's your top 10 list for today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out. Let us know. You'll be glad you did. We may just do them. We'll even give you credit if you choose it. A lot of people reach out. We've already done those bands. We're happy to supply that list for you again, too. I want to thank Roy, as always. Roy got caught up today. Some good lists, man. Some good lists. And we like to do this for your listening pleasure. I had a lot of people that tell me when they come to book signing, Steve, I love the top 10 list because it reminds me of songs I've forgotten, and often it turns me on to some old favorites, but also some bands I'm not quite as familiar with. So we're happy to be of service to you. That's your top 10 list. Reach out to Roy on Twitter or X at Dogmatic67 with your request. That's DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify on that same handle. And, of course, I'm on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You do, too. And if you don't, you will, because they have the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise. A lot of people make the claim, but they are pretenders to the throne. The best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe. Right there, Campus Bookmart. As I've shared many times, best selection of diploma frames that can be found. And that's a gift that is timeless because of the fact they're going to frame it. They're not going to replace the frame, right, unless it gets broken. And every time they look at that diploma, they're going to remember that you bought them the frame. It's a great graduation gift idea for your December graduate and your spring graduate. But December graduation's coming up soon. Be thinking about that if you're the favorite uncle, the favorite aunt, or the favorite grandparent, or you'd like to be, right? How cool is that? Jump aboard, buy yourself some cool Mississippi State merch. Every Bulldog on your list wants new Mississippi State gear. Get them some MSU basketball attire. Get them some MVRS stuff. You can also get my books there. They carry all 7 books there. And if you use promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson, then you can get free shipping on all orders over $75, and you know it, every order less than $75, $75, absolutely incomplete. Okay, Bulldogs going to be taking, Lady Bulldogs, we're going to start ladies first, Thursday, many of you listen to the show on Wednesday, so Thursday, it's 5:30 Mountain Time, so that'll be, 3:30? We'll look to be sure. I think it's 4:30. But anyway, Mississippi State taking on Utah. The Lady Utes off to a good start to the season. Bulldogs 6-0. This will be their first real test, as the Lady Utes are 5-1. They open up with a incredibly one-sided win over Southern Utah. You'd expect that, 105-52. They beat Weber State 86-46. They lose their one loss on the road at Northwestern by two, 71-69 game. Then 118-50 over McNeese State. They snip by, or sneak by, however you'd like to use it, 72-71 winners over St. Joseph's at home there in Salt Lake City. And then they get Montana State, 72-53. So, again, you know, mostly lopsided games, but a couple of close ones there. In close games, they're 1-1. Let's look inside the numbers a little bit here. Kind of know what to expect and who to look for. They're averaging 87 points a game, only allowing 57. So a net of 30 points in the Utes' favor. Scoring margin, 29.8 points in favor of Utah. They shoot it pretty good. I say pretty good. Right at 50%, you know. They're getting it done. They're holding opponents to right at 40%. Three-point percentage right at 39%. And three-point defense has been good, but I think that's also the quality of competition, just 22% from beyond the arc. Pretty good free throw shooting team, about 75%. The ladies usually shoot it pretty well, and I think our numbers are probably a little bit more successful, I guess. Even their opponents are shooting almost 81% from the line, and we've learned in these close games how much free throws matter. Rebounding has been a good thing for them, and again, quality of competition matters. Rebounding margin of just over six a game. They do hand out about 21 and a half assists a game, so it's a team game for them rather than just kind of spread you out and beat you one-on-one. 16 turnovers a game, but they're forcing 23 and a half. That's always nice, you know. Getting your hands on a lot of balls there. 68 steals, opponents just 35. So 11 and a half steals a game, right at that. And a handful of blocks per game, too. So that may say a little something about the post game. Okay, so Gianna Neepkins leads them in minutes played, or close to it. She's one of the main contributors on this team, pitching in 17.3 points a game. They have five players, and four of those five are starters that are averaging double figures. Reese Ross is averaging almost 11 points a game off the bench. Where's number 20? Looking for three-point marksman here. Neepkins, 19 of 38, so shooting 50%. Got to pick her up in the half court for sure. But as a team, again, shooting right at 39% from beyond the arc. And they do put it in the air pretty often, so we're going to have to do a good job there. Neepkins is also one of the top rebounders on the team, but the top rebounder is Reese Ross, believe it or not. And then Maya Toure, also pulling down about six boards a game. She is a 6'3 forward, a grad student from France. Where's number 21? Yeah, we'll see how things go. She also has six blocks, which leads the team, six of their 19 blocks. So it'll be interesting. And so in the event that, we're down in the Caymans. We're not in Caymans yet. So we went to Disney World, I guess, today. I think that's right. I think that's what I saw. So it's a trip. You know, we went down and played the game in Orlando, and then now we'll shoot over to the Caymans and take on the Lady Utes. So, yeah, this is a real challenge for State, and you begin to think about, okay, what could be next? You know, after we play Utah, we'll take on South Florida on Friday. So on the Friday show, we'll recap the Utah game, and then we'll preview that South Florida game. But, big challenge in a beautiful place. Hopefully the Bulldogs can come through with a dub there. In addition to that, you know, we're going to have the men's game. Kind of previewing the Thursday game today. We'll recap that on Friday's show. Bulldogs currently 5-0. And again, feeling good after, you know, comeback wins against Utah and SMU on a neutral court and in a true road environment. Right in Arizona, we'll play UNLV on Thursday. That's going to be an 8:30 tip. So you'll be able to watch the ladies. When that game goes final, you can flip over to CBS Network and watch UNLV. And let me go ahead and tell you now, the women's game is not going to be available on the ESPN app. You'll have to go through Flow Sports if you want to watch that game. I know many of you will just say, you know what, I'll keep up with it on Twitter, Steve. That's always a part of the deal. But let's look here at UNLV, kind of see what to expect from them. They used to be one of the best teams in all of college basketball. A lot of fun. Jerry Tarkanian's teams. All right, 4-1 on the year. They've won three in a row. They open up with a 93-79 win over Alabama State. You'd think that margin would be a little bit better. They lose to Memphis. Their long loss was an 80-74 decision. Memphis playing pretty good basketball here as of late. I know many of you will be at that game. 80-69 winners against Omaha, and they get Pepperdine 80-59, and then New Mexico State 72-65. So not quite as impressive. And they've played all of their games in the Thomas Mack Center there in Las Vegas. So this game in Tempe will be the first time they have played away from their home court. Let's look inside their numbers here and see if we can't get an idea of what to expect from them. And again, the margin, not quite what you'd expect. Averaging 79, almost 80 points a game, giving up 70. Scoring margin of 9.4. I really think State's in a good position here, but could be much like the last couple of games. It may take us a half to kind of figure out some offensive flow and kind of how to attack them defensively. If we can get out and defend in transition, we ought to be in good shape. But that's where both of these teams have hurt us, is when we haven't been able to get back in transition and giving up easy baskets. And in the second half, we just kind of figured out, and Chris Jans always seems to, right? A lot of trust in Chris Jans. Shooting 46% from the field. They're allowing right at 42%. So they shoot it about as well as they allow it to be shot. Three-point shooting, about 39%. Opponents shooting 36. You see these numbers are really, really close. And considering the schedule they played, you'd expect them to be a little gaudier. 77%, I'm going to say, well, about more closer to 76% free throw shooting. Opponents shooting right at 72%. Rebounding, they're actually getting out-rebounded in these games by about a board a game. 172-4 and 176 against. Dishing out 71 assists, their opponents 70. So it's pretty much, you know, six one way, half a dozen the other. They've turned it over 50 times and they've forced 70. So, 10 turnovers a game for 14. So not huge numbers. Again, considering the quality competition, you'd expect these numbers to be better. 43 steals on the season. That's 8.6 a game. And then their opponent's just 4.5. 20 blocks on the year, 12 against. Looking at individual numbers now. Deedon Thomas Jr. leads a team with 17.8 points a game. Also pulling down a couple of boards a game. Dishing out 19 assists on the season. Turned it over six times. So about 3-1, you know, assist turnover ratio, also six steals. Jalen Hills had a good year for him too, 14 steals for him. Dished out 15 assists and has a couple blocks. Jeremiah Bear Cherry, that's a name, right? Started all five games for them, averaging just under 15 points a game. He is a 6'11", 280-pound junior from San Diego, California, by way of St. Mary's Catholic School. He's had some big games for them and appears to be, for a bigger guy, a really good free throw shooter as well. But against Alabama State, he was 10 of 11 from the floor, also pulled down 11 rebounds. It's a good start to the season, no matter where you're from. He's in double digits every game except for that Memphis game. Just 9 points in that game, pulled down 7 rebounds, so still somewhat effective. But he has been kind of the straw that stirs the drink, so I'm sure that they'll run some post, and that's what's interesting too. You know, State not real beefy in the post. They may see that as a mismatch. Could be a situation, though, where some of our faster, leaner guys down low can maybe outquick him a little bit. But it's going to be tough to deny him that entry pass in the post, as big and physical as he may be. That's something to really watch. Julian Rishwain, part-time starter for them, also scoring 9.8 points a game. They got three guys averaging in double figures. You work the numbers here, and you kind of see where this thing is going here. You know, they like to shoot it from outside, but they also run some post offense with Cherry. Maybe we can get him in some foul trouble, and we'll see how things go. But I think State, honestly, I expect State to win this game. I think the game on the women's side is pretty much a toss-up. You know, we'll see how things go with Utah. But we'll learn a little bit about our teams this week, you know, because of the fact, you know, we're out playing against better competition. And we should. You know, a lot of this non-conference stuff is just kind of, you know, glorified exhibitions where you're kind of getting out and figuring out who you can trust. And once the Bulldogs play UNLV, we'll play again the winner of, if I can get to the schedule here, still kind of hemmed up here. So we'll play the winner of, Butler and Northwestern. Butler-Northwestern, so we'll preview that game once we know the results on Thursday. So a quick turnaround for the Bulldogs. Play at 8:30, and then if you lose, you got to play again at 6 the next night. They're college kids. They can recover. You remember what it's like to be in college. But that's kind of the basketball preview right now. And, again, your Bulldogs now nationally ranked at 25 in the Associated Press basketball poll. I expect to see some upward mobility. If we can have a good week, win a couple of games, be in pretty good shape. The Bulldogs back in Humphrey Coliseum on December the 4th against Pitt. That's the SEC-ACC Challenge. It's going to be a late tip, 8:15. We know the students, many of them, will not be around. We'd like for them to be. You know, a lot of people are going to have finals next week. And, you know, we need you here. And so this is the blackout the hump game. So for those of you that are preparing to make the trip or to walk over from the dorms, we encourage you to wear black. We're blacking out the hump on Wednesday, December the 4th. We'll mention that a couple times between now and then. But before we get there, we got a couple of really big basketball games to play. You know, against some teams that have done pretty well. And so, again, we're going to find out a lot about both of our basketball teams here in the next few days. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and you're going to find all the amenities that are available to you on their Facebook page. In addition to that, you're going to have some booking options. You're going to have the ability to book through Airbnb, VRBO. If you book through the Evolve website, that's E-V-O-L-V-E, the Evolve website, I got a promo code for you. It's BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson 10, the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay. 5 soon-to-be 6 bedrooms, 2 bath, the great back porch area, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the fire pit area outside. It's getting cooler. I can't wait to sit around that fire pit and just kind of enjoy spending some time with my family. We're about, you know, a few weeks away from our trip. Got everybody in town right now other than Audrey. We'd love to be there now, but we're going to be out and about taking the grand girls out to see all the family while they're here. But, we're excited. We're excited about staying at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, you probably have some unused vacation time, maybe a midweek trip, maybe the week for the process for you. Get everybody together. Go come take in a couple of games at Humphrey Coliseum. Use the wet bar, the full-service kitchen. Maybe save a little money. Everybody can kind of pitch in, and one family can cook tonight, one can cook the next night. Whether it's a cousin's trip, a class roommate's trip, no matter what group you're getting together, let me encourage you. You be the game changer here. You go ahead and check out some dates, get some rates, call everybody and say, hey, let's do this. We always say it, we need to get together more often, but then we never do. Okay, let's do it, okay? And rather than wait for everybody else to decide when it's a good time, you kind of say, hey guys, this is what we want to do. I miss you guys. Let's all get together and stay at a great venue, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, and have a good couple days together. How great is that? You can look for so many great options to stay, but you know, here's the thing too. Everybody comes up here and you're spread out all over the city or the county. Wouldn't it be great to have everybody under one roof? I can already taste those cinnamon rolls for breakfast that first morning that we wake up in the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And Mom, you and I both know this. There's nothing better than having all the kids and all the grandkids together and let everybody just kind of enjoy being together. Those are the memories that last forever. So give Mom and Dad and everybody else a chance to just kind of love on the kids. And, you know, if you want to sneak on out and maybe go relive your college days responsibly, maybe Mom and Dad can keep the kids and you and your sisters or your siblings or your roommates and everybody else can get together and maybe run down to a local watering hole and just have a good time. And then you can come back and you got somewhere to stay And I can promise you that the grandparents are more than happy to keep the kids while you guys get out and kind of enjoy life a little bit. How neat would that be? So you plan a trip today. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Okay. So I meant to mention this earlier, but we picked up a commitment on the football side during the show the other day, and I didn't get to it. We've got a couple more that we are waiting. We've already got stories written for those commitments, and we're excited about them. You should be too. But Jabrius Stewart out of Mississippi Delta Community College, a 6'3", 200-pound safety that runs a legitimate 4.4, that wants to be at Mississippi State, flips from Florida International to Mississippi State. And, you know, here's the thing. Do I think he's a difference maker? No. No, I don't. Do I think that he could be a solid contributor? I absolutely do. He's got an interesting story, too. He's from Crystal Springs, Mississippi. Graduated high school, kind of lightly recruited, and just said, you know what, maybe it's just time to go to work. And so he moved to Florida, went to work, had to kind of acclimate into a new environment where he didn't know a lot of people. Eventually moved back to Mississippi, and he's working at a poultry plant. And the coaches from Mississippi Delta went and recruited him off the production line at the poultry plant and convinced him to give football another try. He goes to Mississippi Delta, and they haven't been very good. But Coach Tavares Johnson kind of takes the kid under his wing, and now he's going to play Division I football, playing football in the Southeastern Conference. And this is a guy, too. His mom and stepdad made the trip with him last week. It was an unofficial visit, and I don't think we need the official visit because of the fact he jumps on it. We offered him over the weekend. It was really just a chance to kind of get to know him a little bit, sit down with him, and also to see if the size is legitimate, and it is. But this is a guy that knows what it's like to be away from the game. And I think those people sometimes, too, show up with a little more willingness to work, right? As I joked in the article, football over feathers any day, right? So I like where this young man comes from. I like the maturity of him. And we do expect a couple more commitments in the next couple of days. We've already got those stories written. We're just waiting for those young men to announce. We're not trying to scoop them on their own decision. We've provided some graphics, and maybe they'll use them, right? But we're good to go. Again, we've got stories written. So expecting at least two more commitments this week from last week's visitors. And you can kind of go do some deductive reasoning of your own to kind of figure out who those players may be. But we're not going to share it. Now, Chris Johnson, a longtime commitment, committed to stay back in June, is no longer part of the class, and some people will call it a decommitment. I'm here to tell you it's an adjustment. And I agree with the decision. I think one of the cruelest things that you can do is bring a guy in that's not going to play, because you're doing him, your team, and your roster a disservice, because they're going to come in here and waste a couple of years of eligibility when they could be playing somewhere else. Even if it's at the junior college level or the G5, guys need to have an opportunity to play football where they can contribute. You don't want to eat up a scholarship with a guy that can't help your football team. And I do expect at least one more adjustment to the class, so you're prepared for it. I'll just say it's an out-of-state player. Let's just say that. And so we're going to let the young man announce that himself. We are already aware of the situation, but we're going to let those guys do it. We don't want to, again, scoop them on what's considered by some to be potentially negative news. Now, as soon as I put out that Christopher Johnson's, he tweeted it out and I retweeted it, and immediately people start thinking, oh my gosh, what's happening? Guys, if you were a subscriber to Gene's page, you would know that there was a couple of adjustments coming. Now, one of them is in, and I went on a board and explained, hey, one of the adjustments is now public. But let's not use this as an opportunity to trash the staff. This is the right decision. This is best for all parties involved. Because how many times do we see it, right? You can't fall in love with guys and then they have a subpar senior year and you think, okay, well, maybe I can fix them. Let me tell you this, in this league, you can't. You just don't have time to fix them. It's one thing to take a guy that you know is developmental, and you kind of have that development plan in mind when you sign them. But when you think about defensive line, we're just not in a position right now that we can take scratch and dent players. We got to get guys who can come in and be solid contributors right away. That's how it has to be. Now, a lot of questions are going to come up as soon as the portal opens. Hey, Steve, who do you expect to go in the portal? There's a couple names that we already know, but we're not going to share those with you just yet because we got a big ball game to play, right? That's an important aspect of this. Now, one of the things, I got a question earlier this week, just today actually, and he said, hey, Steve, I've been following recruiting for a while, but I don't know the difference between an official and an unofficial visit. Let me explain that to you, okay? That's what I'm here to do, to educate and inform and entertain. An official visit means that everything is all expense paid. So we have the official visit. We bring them up. We put them up in a hotel room. We feed them. We give them the tour, let them go to the game. We feed them again. We pay for mileage or airfare, those sorts of things. It used to just be the only the student athlete could come. And then they passed the rule, of course, that a parent could come or a guardian could come. And now it's a little more open these days, where more of the family can come and enjoy that. So an official visit means they come officially as a guest of the university, where the university pays all the expenses. An unofficial visit, and you can take as many of those as you want. It used to be official visits were capped at 5, but it's not like you can call up Mississippi State and say, hey, we want to come take an official visit. You've got to be invited in for that. Now, if you want to be an unofficial game day visitor, you know, then, hey, you just pick up the phone and say, hey, we'd like to come to the game, and they'll give you a ticket plus 2, and they'll let you come unofficially. But you are responsible for your meals. You're responsible for your travel. And if you decide to spend a night, you're responsible for that too. You know, the only thing that you're basically given by the university is tickets to the game. So every other expense comes out of your pocket. So an official visitor pays for nothing. An unofficial visitor pays for everything but the ticket, okay? And there are a lot of guys. Any guy that comes to a game day visit is an unofficial visitor. It means they are a guest of the university, so there are certain rules they have to follow and that we in the media have to follow. Like, we can't go up and interview a player during an official or an unofficial visit. That would be an NCAA violation because the university cannot promote a visit to campus through the media. Does that make sense? That's important to understand. And so anytime that you guys have those questions about recruiting, I'm happy to answer them. And so you feel free to hit me up and we'll talk about it on the show. There's only so many characters and so much typing I can do in a day. But if you ask me, I'm happy to address it on the show. So thank you for the question, sir. And I hope I answered that question for you. But yeah, it's everything is changing a little bit. As I mentioned here a couple of weeks ago, they changed the rule. You know, there's the cap on official visits, right, for schools. There's not a cap on for student athletes. I mean, if you get 10 invitations for official visits, if you can get them in, you can take all 10 of them. It used to be 5. But universities have a cap. And so this year they changed the rule because we've seen so much attrition in the portal and so many teams are now dependent on the portal to reach the overall 85 scholarship limit. They've removed the cap, and I think eventually you're going to see that become permanent. That needs to be the case. And so that's important to understand. There's a lot happening. The rules are changing kind of as we go, but that was good legislation. The NCAA gets criticized a lot, and rightfully so, but that was a good decision. I think also removing the 25 scholarship limitation was also a great decision because how do you navigate the portal? If I can only sign 25, now you're crushing high school recruiting, right? I may have 20 guys leave. And then I've got 20 guys to graduate. Well, I got 40 open spots on the scholarship rolls, and you're only allowing me to sign 25. I'm going to be short 15. So the NCAA kind of saw that happening and said, okay, listen, we need to remove this cap so teams can kind of replenish their rosters when they have guys that transfer out. Again, good legislation, right? And listen, I've always been for the transfer. I really wasn't for immediate eligibility unless both schools agreed. right? Does that make sense? I've always felt like there was not enough wrong with what we had before where you could transfer. The old rule used to be you transferred and had to sit a year. It was called the old residency requirement. You had to establish residency for a year before you were eligible to play as a transfer. And we had some basketball guys that Ben Howland recruited that were not SEC players. And I don't know, we figured it out until they got here. And they elected to transfer. There is no lower level in many respects, but they wanted to transfer to lesser programs. And so we had no objection to those guys playing right away. So this other school requests a waiver. We just sign off on it. It's done, right? It was good. And so there was nothing wrong with that. You know, let's say for an example, you talk about football, right? So let's say for an example that you've got a guy that comes in here and plays for 2 years. He learns all your signals, learns your playbook, learns your formations, and then he transfers to a conference rival. Well, now all of a sudden, he can basically be a mole for them, right? He's a guy, maybe mole's not the right term, but he can be a guy that's got inside information that provides you with a competitive advantage over another player, another team. And so there was rules against transferring within the conference, and everybody said, hey, this is not right. Guys need to stay closer to home. Ladies need to stay closer to home. And used to, you would sign off on a transfer and say, hey, you can transfer anywhere within the conference or to anybody that we play in the next 2 years. And people felt that was a little bit too restrictive. So they changed the rule. But we become very, 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 very student-athlete conscious. I've always been in favor of what's best for the student-athlete. I think we've overcorrected, though. There's just too much out there these days where there really is no protection for the schools. You know, really one of the only things that's made sense in recent years is we've narrowed the transfer portal windows. Used to, like in the infancy of the portal, let's say your head coach has to jump in a guy's hindquarters because he didn't give good effort in a practice. Well, he would just go run the compliance and say, I'm a transfer. I'm getting out of here. How dare that guy talk to me that way? And forget the fact that I've been a turd and I hadn't practiced hard. I'll show them. I go get in the portal. And they go get in the portal. And then all of a sudden they got five schools contacting by the end of the night saying, hey, we'll give you $10,000 transfer here. And now we've got, you know, all of that kind of self-will run riot. So that's important to understand. So, again, I appreciate the question. Always a lot of recruiting information kind of coming your way. And, again, signing day a week from Wednesday, December the 4th, your high school, junior college guys will sign an FAA, a financial aid agreement. You know, the NLI is going away, you know, and so it's kind of important to understand that. That's a change, too. It's so interesting. Like last year they were saying, hey, we need to set up a signing period where guys who transfer have some protection, schools have some protection. They can sign a letter of intent and be bound to the school and in the recruiting process. And it appeared that that was going to pass, and we've gone completely the other direction. Now nobody has to sign a letter of intent. You know, it's not binding anymore. So we'll see. It's evolving times for college athletes and for college administrators and coaches out there. And I can begin to imagine how challenging it is to manage a college roster in any sport right now. It's tough, man, because you never know from 1 year to the next. It's almost like coaching in junior college. You know, you just don't have guys that hang around for 4 years. Guys that come in as a freshman and redshirt and get bigger, faster, and stronger and learn more about the game. And then next thing you know, they're graduates of a university. That's a cool thing, right? But nowadays, if guys come in and they don't play right away, well, I'm going to just go transfer out. I'm going to see how much money I can get. I'm going to get out of here, right? And they just kind of reset it. And there are guys out there, too, and this is something nobody really talks about. How are we teaching these guys to manage their money? There are some guys out there that are going to make more money as student athletes and are going to make as working stiffs. You know, there's some people out there getting six figures. They're not going to get six figures a year in their regular job. And so what do? How do you prepare for life? You know, those are things you got to think about. And I think school administrators have to do a good job and you know, kind of acclimating those guys and teaching them to be responsible with their money, because next thing you know, I mean, you see it all the time now. You know, the student athletes now, hey, it's good work if you can get it. It's like every time I turn around that, you know, everybody is in Miami or everybody's in Las Vegas or everybody's in Hollywood. You know, that's always something interesting to me. That's not a good use of your money, but hey, it's your money. Do what you want, but it's not going to last forever. All that understood. I'm a big supporter of college athletics, as you guys know. I just think that everybody needs to be responsible with what they do. And we have an obligation as the adults to help these young people kind of mature and you know, kind of acclimate for life. If you hadn't done so, you can order your signed copy of The Dude from DutyNimbleBook.com. All my sports titles are there, along with When the Bottom Falls. It's a great gift. And as always, you can always get a copy of Flim Flam for your smart aleck Ole Miss coworker or brother-in-law. I'm happy to sign those for you, too. And come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. It's a unique gift idea, too. We're running the BOGO. You can call 662-268-7601. Get a buy one, get one free. We had a guy today, a listener to the show, called and said, hey, I just want to gift this to somebody else. I want to support you guys, so I'm going to buy the BOGO, and you guys can just donate it to somebody of need within the Starkville community. That's a pretty cool thing, too. So, we appreciate your support, and think that we got a good situation here. We think we can help you a little bit. You know, whether you've suffered with anxiety or chronic pain or you just need a break, we may be able to help you. It worked for me. It may work for you. You get to float for an hour. Get some solitude, turn the phone off, and just kind of have some chance to just let the body rest and let your mind rest. It's improved my mental acuity. It's done wonders for my stress and anxiety and depression and things like that. And again, it may work for you. So I encourage you, call Dana with any of your questions. Again, 662-268-7601, and come float with us. It's a great gift idea. It's a unique gift, too, and you never know. Chances are you know somebody that is somewhat impaired, whether it be mentally or physically or emotionally, that could use a break and a chance to just kind of relax a little bit. We may be able to help you with that. So come be a part of that at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Please follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. You follow everybody else, follow us too. We'd love to have you come be our guest. Let's get out of here. And Gus, listen, I love each and every one of you, even if you don't love me back. And Thanksgiving's coming up. It's a great time to be with family. I wish the Egg Bowl was on Thanksgiving. I think it's a great thing. Many of you disagree, and it's okay. But listen, enjoy your time with your family. We never know when it's our last Thanksgiving. And I can share with you guys this, man. My grandmother, Mamaw Selman, man, Margaret Jo Selman, Audrey is named Audrey Margaret after her. And I tell you, she made such a big deal out of Thanksgiving in our family, like all these small-town Mississippi grandmothers do, man. Nothing was better than going to Mamaw Selman's house for Thanksgiving. It was the biggest holiday of the year for us. And, you know, she got Alzheimer's and wasn't herself. And, you know, we don't do Thanksgiving down there anymore. And we don't. And I remember the last time that I saw her, and they told me, Steve, don't get your feelings hurt if she doesn't know you. And I remember looking at her and talking to her. And all of a sudden, she got this look of recognition. And I said, you know, Memo, do you know who I am? And she said, you're Stephen. And I said, yes, ma'am, I am. I am. And I think it's one of God's greatest gifts that he's ever given to me, was to be able to have that Thanksgiving visit with her at the nursing home before she passed away. And she still knew who I was. And I miss her. I do. I really, really miss her, because she was the person in my life whenever I needed to call somebody and have somebody just tell me, baby, it's all going to be okay. She was that person for me. And maybe you're that person within your family. But enjoy your Thanksgiving. Enjoy being with the kids. Get out, play a little football, watch a little football, eat too much. You know, we got, you know, plenty of time to kind of work those calories off. But, you know, let's not overdo it, but let's have a good time. But more importantly than the food and the fun is family. And if I can tell you, the biggest advice I can ever give you, man, and I know I give a lot on this show, is if you are estranged from somebody in your family, even if it's for a good reason, you know, try to find a way to make peace and forgive, 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 forgive. I believe the world would be a much better place if we offered forgiveness as often as we asked for forgiveness. I think that would change a lot in the world. You guys have a great Thanksgiving. And until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live. One more programming note, too. We're going to do the Friday show after the Egg Bowl. Yeah, so we'll do it Friday night for you guys. So there will be no Friday show because the Egg Bowl is going to be at 2:30. So I just figured, you know what, win or lose, we'll wait and do it Friday evening. And so to just be aware of that. And again, let's say it again, just because it's Thanksgiving, Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.